Morning. Who do you have anything you want to go over with us before we have the director start?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a refresher for you. We stopped right before the cigarette tax compliance package, and the department is going to cover that, and then they'll have staff respond to the questions that were asked yesterday.
Okay. Good morning.
Madam Chair, I may have asked a few questions following the meeting. We may have some additional information.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. I have the pleasure today of a job shadow.
Oh, wonderful.
This is Bridget Currier. Bridget is a sophomore at South Salem High School, and I've known her since she was 9. We've had a mentor and friend relationship for the last almost 7 years now.
I assumed she was your employee, and I thought employees are looking younger and younger.
Yes, every day, that's right. We do have some student workers, but I don't know if we have any that are just almost 16. So she's shadowing me today, and courageously said she'd like to sit at the table with us to share
that's
the
wonderful
experience.
So. Welcome. I hope you enjoy your day.
Also with me today is John Scott. John is the administrator of the business division at the Department of Revenue, and the business division has responsibility for our cigarette and other tobacco taxes, and so John has a presentation on the tobacco tax programs for you.
John?
Morning. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Scott, administrator for the business division for the Department of Revenue. What I'm going to try to do today is to give you an overview of the tobacco programs. We will cover cigarette tax. We'll spend a little time on the other tobacco products. We'll also spend some time on some of the issues that we've encountered over the last couple of years. We'll talk about the history of the rate changes here in Oregon, and then a comparison of how we compare to other states around us. We'll also talk about some of the compliance issues and some problems that we've noted in the last couple of years in primarily the cigarette tax program, though there is some additional issues in the other tobacco. We'll talk a little bit about the master tobacco settlement and then the results of a pilot program that we ran March and April of last year, and then I will launch into the policy package. And then as a wrap up, I understand that members of the committee were interested in actually seeing some counterfeit stamps, counterfeit cigarette stamps, as well as maybe some Swiss made, and I'll have those at the end of the presentation. The cigarette tax program for the state of Oregon was instituted in 1965. And from 65 until about 1997-98, as Elizabeth had mentioned earlier, it was a sleepy little program. We really did very little other than provide administration, as well as issued tax stamps and licenses. It was really a non-problem for us, and I'll give you one of the reasons. I'll start back in the 70s. On the East Coast, you had the tobacco-producing states, primarily the Carolinas, that had virtually no tax or very low tax on their tobacco products. And so, and in your eastern states, you had very high taxes. So that created an economic incentive to move cigarettes from the Carolinas to the Eastern Seaboard, New York, New Jersey, so forth and so on. And if you've been reading the paper lately, that problem has began to present itself here in the western states. And when I get to that point where I show you where the difference is in the tax rates in the western states, you'll get a better picture for that. I'll start with the cigarette tax program on 4-2. Taxes are collected from the distributors, and that's who actually pay the taxes to the department. They purchase cigarette stamps from us, and the current rate is 68 cents a pack. In terms of revenues, it generates, it generated in 1997-99, about $371.5 million, we look at what is projected to raise this biennium, and it's around 311. And then we look at the coming biennium, we look at 275.5. So we're looking at, over a period of 3 or 4 years, close to $100 million shortfall in the revenues produced by the secret tax program. And I'll talk a little more about the where and the why of that in a moment. Where does the money go? It goes to pay general, for general fund, health division, the health plan, cities, counties, and transit programs. And you'll see on 4-3 how that money is distributed. The lion's share goes to the Oregon Health Plan.
Madam Chair, may I just ask what percentage is dedicated exclusively to the Oregon Health Plan? I assume that's by percentage, is it not, John?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that is absolutely correct. I believe it's 54%.
54% Oregon Health Plan, and then the cities and counties get a percentage, by percentage, as I recall. What percentage is that?
I think it's 2 to 4%.
Okay.
I can get you the exact percentage. I believe general fund is about 34%. And then I think it's 2% to the counties. It's about 2% to senior transportation. That's the one with the Oregon Department of Transportation.
That's the 9.4 million.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then the cities and counties.
Well, I guess I could just figure it out. I assume that I could just run the percentage. Maybe Sue Blashen has it there.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, I would just maybe recommend that you look in the revenue tab of the budget document. It's not by percentage, but it tells you of the 68% how many cents go to each of those.
Of the 68 cents.
Right.
Okay, so it's the cents of the 68 cents tax that are divvied up.
Of the 68 cents collected, 22 cents goes to the general fund expense here, 37 cents to the Oregon Health Plan, 3 cents to the tobacco use reduction account, 2 to the Department of Transportation, and 4 cents to Department of Administrative Services, which in turn transfers 2 cents to Oregon cities and 2 cents to the counties.
All of that totals up to 68 cents, then.
I assume so, too.
Thank you very much.
Not quite that fast.
And as Representative Hayden is astutely says, it still has to be percentage anyway when you get all done with it. So would it be easier if we just had a dollar tax on the cigarettes and then you
move, Madam Chair.
I mean, I noticed that north of us and south of us, and I'm particularly interested in this morning, I met with the OLCC, and they said that their stores on right across from Washington sell a lot of tobacco, and right next to California sell a lot of tobacco, and I thought, wait a minute, I thought Oregon was awfully high, but I noticed that we're 68%, and they're both in the 80s, Washington and California.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, I didn't know that until just this morning. So, and we have a graph, I think, on 4.8.
Right.
You'll be discussing Indian tribal.
I most certainly will.
Yeah.
Okay. You'd like to proceed?
Okay. I'll move to page 4.4. And this is the other tobacco programs. And other tobacco covers everything other than cigarettes. And that's chew, cigars, the so forth and so on. And there's a whole list of other tobacco products. This program was enacted in 1986, and the tax at the time was 35% of the wholesale price. Then there was a rate increase right at the same time that the cigarette tax increased in 1997 to 64% of the wholesale. We looked at what the projected revenues, and at least based on revenue projections, we don't seem to have any major issues here, but we have a lot of anecdotal information that tells us that we do, and I'll cover some of that a little later. So it's moved from $97.99, $21 million to a projected $42.4 million in the coming biennium. The right column, 4-5, covers where the money goes. Again, to the general fund, also goes to the Oregon, to the health plan, as well as to the tobacco reduction program with the health division.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
You use the wholesale price because that's easier to pin down than the retail price?
By statute, that's what we use.
Yeah. Thank you.
The balance of the presentation is going to primarily focus on the cigarette tax program, only with just a little bit of information about the other tobacco. As I said earlier, it was a sleepy little program, and our primary role was really administration and stamp sales. Over the last few years, we began to encounter some significant problems. And if you had an opportunity to read the couple of articles in the Oregonian, I believe it was March 5th, there was a front page article that really kind of talked about that. I'll cover a lot of that for your information here today. I think one of the things to get a sense for is how does the product flow through the state? And the manufacturers and importers, those are foreign importers, bring the product into the state to the distributors. The distributors then, we license the distributors, and they purchase stamps from the Department of Revenue. They then take those stamps and apply them to the cigarette products, and then they're then distributed to retailers around the state, and ultimately the consumer is the one who pays this tax. Now, getting a, and I'm on 4.8, 4.6, I'm going to 4.7 now. As I look at the tax rate started in the state of Oregon in 1965 at 4 cents a pack, and has had gradual increases over time. As you can see, we've only highlighted those places where there were the increases. Now, there was a significant increase in 1997, and what other states had experienced is when you have a significant increase in your tax rate, what follows is generally some a lot of non-compliance. And so we are experiencing nothing different than the rest of the states have experienced. And I began to talk about how other states line up. If you recall the story I talked about on the East Coast with virtually very little the tax rate being very low in some states and then very high in others. When we look at our state as well as look at how the product is delivered through the getting to Oregon, we have states who have, like Montana, Wyoming, and others, who have low tax rates, 12 cents or and slightly higher. And then we look at our rate of 68 along with Washington, 86. Three and California with 87, everything east of Oregon, east of the West Coast, is actually at a much lower tax rate. So that provides the economic incentive to then, in fact, sell stamps, sell product in Oregon at a significant profit. The other thing I wanted to mention here is we also get into cigarettes coming up from Mexico, coming in through Canada and other parts of the world. On your right side, you will see a sample of an authentic stamp, and you'll get a chance to actually see this and touch it and compare it then to a counterfeit. And what we have is I have the samples that our agent has been able to seize from outlets around the state, and so that you can have that for you to see, and we're using these so we'll be able to tell the difference between authentic and a counterfeit. And the counterfeits really say that, one, people are not paying the tax, and that's really what's going on. We'll talk a little bit about smuggling of untaxed cigarettes, gray market, we'll talk a little bit about that. And then the internet sales. We know that we have an increasing issue on internet sales of tobacco products, cigarettes being sold over the internet. We don't really have a handle on how big this problem is. So part of what we'll try to do is to assess that problem and work with the other states that have had some success working with distributors selling over the internet to see if we can have a regional strategy rather than Oregon having to do this alone. As I've mentioned earlier, the scope of the problem, we're looking at in a four-year period approximately $100 million from revenues that were collected in 97-99, and this is cigarette only, 97-99 to 03 projection of $275,000. One of the things we will acknowledge is that there has been a reduction in the consumption of cigarettes. And the health division says it's somewhere between 3% and 4% and 5%. We have a corresponding difference of about 12%. So what we believe that difference is noncompliance. And I'll mention all of that.
Thank you, John. Do we know how the 12% of noncompliance in the state of Oregon relates to noncompliance in other states? It must be higher in California. You've got bigger borders. California's that state that's washed on the west by the Pacific and cleaned on the east by Nevada, one way or the other. But do we have any idea how that may be working out relative to these, for instance, Washington, which also has a border with Canada, California, the border with Mexico. How does our 12% stack up? How does it stack up against these states?
Madam Chair, Clarno and Representative Butler, we don't have exactly their percentage, but we do have their estimates of dollars. In California, the estimates that they've given us is about $127 to $130 million a year is lost due to noncompliance. In the state of Washington, it's $113 million due to noncompliance. We're looking at approximately $9 to $11 million in terms of a loss due to noncompliance. So I couldn't give you their percentage, but I can give you the dollars that they've given us.
Thank you. That's helpful. And then, Madam Chair, just one other follow-up. Do we have the elasticity of a formula of elasticity relative to the loss of sales at 68 versus the loss of sales of 78 or 88 cents, bringing us closer in line with the states immediately to the north and south, San Nevada? Is that something the Department of Revenue does or has access to?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I don't know if we have that in terms of, and if I understand you correctly, you're asking if our tax rate was 78 cents versus 68.
How much less would we sell, and what would be the cost or the enhanced net enhanced revenue? And then obviously the compliance becomes a factor there too. Because if our compliance is 12% non-compliant, then we could obviously experience with other states, for instance, Montana not that far away, and Idaho adjacent, and Nevada adjacent, we might be able to end up where there'd be more non-compliant, more bootlegging of smuggled cigarettes.
Representative, but what the data has showed, as well as what we have been able to acquire in terms of information from other states, if you bump up your rate again significantly, if you're only talking a few cents, it probably has little impact. But once you start moving 5, 10, 15%, your compliance issue is going to be exacerbated.
So you've got a compliance, Madam Chair, if I may just follow up, you've got both a compliance issue plus a reduction of tobacco usage issue. So the elasticity, you've got a couple of factors that would apply then.
Absolutely.
All right.
We haven't had an opportunity to do the kind of the research that we would need to say if it's 78 cents, here's now then what the results is. If it's 69 cents, here's now then what the result would be. We haven't had an opportunity to do that.
Madam Chair, just do we know whether or not the certified smart folks down in the revenue and the other places that keep track of this stuff, do we know that they monitor that and are we aware of some track of this with the 12% non-compliant rate being factored in?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I don't know, but I'd be happy to find out for
you.
And legislative revenue.
And legislative revenue, basically.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Just
what are the outlets for smuggled cigarettes? I mean, how do they make money? They move it into the state from Idaho. Where does it go? I mean, if you bring in a couple of cartons for Uncle, there's no profit there. Obviously, you're talking about selling them at retail somewhere.
My wife's kitchen table.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, there are a number of outlets throughout the state of Oregon. We have lounges. We have small retail outlets. We have discount cigarette and tobacco outlets. We have a variety of different retail establishments where these products are broken down. And an example, if you would, because I'm glad you mentioned that, if we'll turn to 412. This was an incident that the department was called in because there was a semi truckload being unloaded in Eastern Oregon, coming from Idaho and perhaps come from a number of different places, being unloaded and broken down into smaller panel trucks. That would then then the bills of lading said that they were going to be distributed in Washington and throughout Oregon. At that point in time, we called in the state police that actually notified us because we're not sworn officers. Our role was to then take and inventory the merchandise, really see if they really were legal or not. We had the state of Washington that was involved in that, and there were some of the issues here where they were being distributed either in Washington or in Oregon. And so there are many outlets for the sale and distribution of untaxed product.
Madam Chair, so it wouldn't be illegal for the retailer to sell them because if the tax is on the wholesaler?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, it is illegal for a it is legal for a licensed distributor to have untaxed product. But once they move it into the state, it must then be have the state stamp on it, and then sold at retail. So you don't have a distributor that just only sells in, let's say, Oregon, or only sells in Washington. You have distributors that sell in multiple states. And so they have access to all of the stamps, to Montana, Washington's, and you have people who are very candidly who are criminals, who organize crime, and borders mean nothing to them. And so what they do is they have other outlets to distribute these products.
Madam Chair, I don't think I completely understand. If somebody comes in with a van of cigarettes and goes to a lounge and says, I'll make you a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then is the lounge owner who sells those knowing that they haven't paid the full tax, is he in violation of any state law?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, the lounge owner that sells a cigarette, yes, he is.
Okay.
And what we normally do is we seize that product.
Okay. Thank you.
Once we discover it.
I would just say that in my view of this, from what I gather, is these contacts are all made. I mean, this is kind of like a drug ring or it's organized crime thing.
Right.
So they don't go just by happenstance to a bar or to a convenience store or a service station that may sell cigarettes. They have this thing all organized and greased.
Well, my question was just one of logistics, Madam Chair. Taxes are collected from distributors via the revenue stamps. The distributor purchases the revenue stamps. And then they go to retailers. The retailers don't pay a tax. They don't put the tax stamps on.
No, the distributor has put the tax. So you want to buy from, if you're going to sell cigarettes, you want to buy from a reputable
reputable, honest distributor.
That is correct.
Because if you don't, and you don't recognize that that's the right stamp to be on there, I assume you could be held liable for...
Well, that was my question. Is the retailer liable in any way under Oregon law if they're selling taxes with a with an Idaho tax stamp on it or no tax stamp at all?
I would think yes.
That is correct. And what we normally do in those cases, we just seize the product, and then we try to provide some education, you know, to say that this product is illegal. We don't run into a lot of that as we go out and visit the retail establishment. The very candidly, most of the retail establishments are you know, very much on the up and up. We just have a number of them that that cause us problems. We also find that distributors, the legal licensed distributors, who for the most part really want to do the right thing, actually want us to be out there more, because when we have agents out in the field providing enforcement, then their legitimate sales go up, because what happens is that you have a person down the street that's been selling product for less, and so it's an unlevel playing field.
Got it.
Just one follow-up question in that regard, John. Are retail sellers licensed? You said something about a licensed seller. Are the retailers licensed?
Mr. Chair Butler, the retail establishments are not licensed by the department. We only license the distributors.
Distributors.
So in the event we seize a product from a retailer, we give that retailer a receipt for seizing that product, and then they then go back to the distributor, and the distributor makes them whole.
Well, then there isn't any penalty on the retailer. It's not illegal for the retailer to sell smuggled goods.
Well,
you're giving them a receipt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, it is, and that's the reason why we seize it. Our ability is only to seize it. It is not a crime. Our recourse is to seize that product.
All right. There's no teeth. Okay.
Excuse me. Just one follow-up question with regard to the example on 412. If the truck was directed towards the sovereign, that is the Umatilla tribe, could it have been seized where it was seized? If it had been on tribal lands.
Representative Butler, that is absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, that was the case. It was on tribal lands, and because we have agreements with five of the Native American tribes in the state of Oregon, they then provide that compliance for us, and so they actually seized the truck.
Follow up on what Representative Hayden was getting to. It is not a crime to sell these as a retailer.
No, it is not a crime.
Because, Mr. Chair, it would be so easy if we had enough agents to walk in the store and see if there was a tax stamp on the, is it on the package, on the cigarette pack, or on the carton? Is it on the carton or on the pack? If they're boxed up, can you tell if there's a tax stamp on it?
Excuse me.
If they're in a box of 12 or whatever.
They're in a box of 12.
Can you see from the outside? If
yes, you can,
stamp?
And what we ask them to do, what we ask all the retailers to do, is to turn the cigarettes outward so that we can see the stamp, so that we don't have to rifle through their product on display.
Yeah. Talk to you about that.
Thank you. Representative Hayden, we also have a legislative bill in to... provide for increased penalties, misdemeanors as well as felonies in the cigarette tax program. And I'll go back to, since the programs started in 1965, we've had very little upgrade in the statutes. And so we've now had to really take a look, because of the kind of problems we're dealing with, to put a little more teeth.
Your bill deals with enforcement or revenue?
It deals with enforcement.
And the bill number is?
Senate Bill 423.
Senate Bill 424?
423, the Senate Bill 424 as well, and I believe the Senate Bill 425. Yes.
Are they moving?
Yes.
Have they had hearings?
Yes, they have.
All right.
In your opinion, will that resolve this, John?
It will resolve most of the issues that we have. Those are just some of the tools. The primary tool that we need is, and let's put this into context, in the state of Oregon, we have one revenue agent for the entire state. When I compare that to Washington has 16 sworn agents and another 20 or 30 that they can call on as they deal with issues. Look at California. California has 12 agents specifically assigned to cigarette tax. They have an additional 10 to 15 other tobacco as well as liquor. I look at the state of Arizona. Arizona has, which is probably a lot more like the state of Oregon, in that their rate is 58 cents, ours is 68. Populations are similar. Number of distributors are somewhat similar. And they have 10 agents. They have a staff of 10 that actually provide compliance for that state. So, and we have one.
So your problem is that you're not allowed by statute to use the enormous $350 million, Mr. Chair, worth of revenue that you're getting to hire more agents. You can't do that by administrative rule?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, no, we cannot. The statute provides that the expenses, the cost of administrating the cigarette tax program is general fund, even though a significant portion goes to other fund programs. So we cannot offset our cost by the proceeds.
How much would you need you would need $1 million to fund 10 more agents?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
John, if I were just to look at the amount that we would be losing through enforcement, what I'd do is I'd take on the graph on 4.3, that $312 million, 311.8, and I'd divide that by 0.88, which shows me the 12%. Basically, that we are presently losing, that would come up to $354 million. The difference between 354 and 312, I'm not good with numbers, excuse me.
Seeing him work this whole machine just about makes me dizzy.
But we're not going to be able to capture all $42 million. We're not going to have 100% compliance rate.
Mr. Chair, you're absolutely correct. We do not expect to capture all of the dollars, at least initially. But it's like anything else. Once you start having a presence and people know that you're out there, you provide the kind of education, the enforcement, the kind of local enterprise working with the other state agencies, this thing builds over time. So that what happens is you may have, it's like the income tax program, you may have a number of people that are out of compliance for a while. And then as you begin to bring them in compliance, you have less and less people in compliance. So in fact, you not only get the dollars today, but you also get the dollars tomorrow.
And the more the people out there that are doing this type of thing
Absolutely. Hear
that there's some people that are really stressing on compliance.
In that regard, Madam Chair, there's an indication that Senate Bills 423, 424, and 425 are for enforcement and added penalties and perhaps even criminal counts against those folks that would be involved in this kind of bootlegging. Have you done any kind of a study relative to what the enforcement, this enhanced law relative to the criminal forfeiture and criminal indictment might be before we lunge out with any kind of additional compliance efforts? In other words, do we know how much more compliance we'll have as a result of putting some teeth in the current law? Tried to estimate that as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, we haven't done an analysis of that. What we have done is we had a couple of issues in Portland, as an example. We had a huge semi-truckload come in from eastern Oregon, Idaho, and wound up in a warehouse in Portland. They then took and unloaded that and broke that shipment down and then began to disperse it all over. Our current laws allowed us to do nothing. We could not seize the truck. We were working with the state of Washington and the feds on this, and there was nothing we could do because our current law did not allow us to do that.
But the Senate bill that you've got proposed, they're in process.
They will assist us in that effort.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank
Madam
you.
Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Let me pursue a scenario just for a minute. Assuming, I'm going to read these bills and see what they say, but assuming that you get some teeth, it's a misdemeanor, if not a Class C felony, and the legislature gives you 10 more agents to enforce the misdemeanor actions, then we want to know what kind of increased cash flow are we going to have.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, it is our plan to track the number of dollars, not just from seizure, but also if we have a projected, let's say it's $275 million right now, that's pretty solid. That's the revenues that would come in over the next biennium. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to track what was the amount of revenues we actually received. Because when you complete a seizure, the word gets around. And so what ultimately happens is we are unable to track, in terms of actual revenue dollars, the preventive issues. On the upfront issues, if we're working with the distributors as well as with retailers, and then we're providing them with the information and education that they need, then correspondingly, if the sales go up, we know that we've been effective. That's one piece. The other piece is also what we continue to seize, and it's our hope that at some point we have such a small percentage of counterfeits, because Oregon is no longer a haven to carry on this kind of activity.
Mr. Hayden? To continue. Well, the fly in the ointment is that we don't want sales to go up. We want sales to go down. We want people to stop smoking. But if they're going to smoke, we want them to pay the tax.
That is absolutely correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. I will move to 413. And one of the things that the Master Tobacco Settlement requires the department to do, and that is to provide information to the Attorney General that helps them determine the payments from the manufacturers, so it's whatever their market share is. We also need to do auditing on quarterly reports, as well as kind of evaluate some of this gray market product that's intended for foreign consumption that winds up here and not being counted. Ultimately, the Master Tobacco Settlement requires that the state provide due diligence, which means we must track and enforce the non-members of the tobacco settlement and track that kind of activity so that we can cease that, so that the amount of monies that the state would be receiving from the Master Tobacco Settlement are in fact its fair share. If we don't do that, then the state is subject to lose up to 50% of its share of settlement. And based on our current staffing, we can't get there. I'll try to wind this up with our enhancement package. And as I had mentioned before, one, working with the distributors, retailers, the general public. I also talked about the state of Oregon has agreements with five of the Native American tribes here in Oregon, which is a real plus for the state of Oregon compared to the issues that California and Washington do, because what they do is they provide the the compliance, they collect the tax for us on their reservations, and in fact, we have a reciprocal agreement where we pay them for that, for that portion of the population that's Native American. So we have a very good arrangement. It works real well for us. It keeps us from having to set out outside of the reservations to determine who's supposed to be buying cigarettes and not, and that kind of thing. So it's really served us extraordinarily well. In summary, what I'd like to say is that we looked at 9 positions, and we asked, well, do we really need 9 positions? We asked this question really long and hard. And what is it that we're required to do? What is the effect of that? And so what is the minimum amount of resources we need to have an effective program that provides enforcement, education, and ultimately has people paying the taxes due? And this is what we came up with. We had to have some auditing done. We have issues in other tobacco, as an example. We have the issues where we hadn't done any auditing in tobacco or cigarette tax for as long as I can remember. And if it has been, it's so minimal. We had one tax auditor that we reassigned for about a month and a half just to audit the other tobacco issues, the inventories, invoices, those kinds of things. And we discovered that just with that little bit of work, we had 9 audits that provided about $134,000 of unassessed that we assessed the distributors. Additionally, we audited about another 13 others, and so the total dollars there that we were able to assess and bill was close to $400,000, and that's just with one auditor working these programs for like a month and a half. Because of that, we had another distributor and their representative come forward to the department here recently and say that they had been out of compliance, and we looked at that, and they owed us close to $650,000. So with just one auditor doing the kind of work that we need to do and we haven't done, it amounted to approximately $1 million. And so that same function will be carried on through other tobacco as well as the cigarette tax program. So we are very confident that generating the $7 million shouldn't be much of a problem. We do have an issue with hiring the folks because you just don't just throw them out there. You really have to make sure they know what they're doing, know what to look for, and we have good procedures.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the policy option package, and I am concerned that it may be somewhat optimistic that we'll be able to generate, and I don't know how you do it with 9 full-time equivalency positions. That's per biennium a little over $100,000 per position. But I'm wondering if perhaps, well, I've got two issues. Number one, excuse me, thank you very much for the website hit on 411 on 1877 Joe Smoke.
Right.
That's totally legal in organism. That's totally legal in organism.
Absolutely.
And there's got to be a lot of folks that are ordering in their smokes that way.
There are about 2,500 websites out there that have tax-free, duty-free.
Right. And again, there's no penalty from ordering from these folks as long as it's for their own personal use.
And as long as a single order does not exceed 1 carton of cigarettes.
Oh, I see. So the name brands are $30 a carton, and there's no shipping, free shipping over $100. So They would be in violation if they ordered free shipping on it, in effect. Well, as long as you're willing to pay $37 a carton, that's $30 plus shipping according to the advertisement, use my Visa card to do that and order up those smokes, then those could actually be delivered to a youngster 15 years old, couldn't they?
That is absolutely right.
Okay. But it's legal to do that for under one carton or under.
That is correct.
And what are the penalties for folks that do 5 partners or 15?
The penalty is that...
Other than lung cancer.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, other than lung cancer, the penalty is that we have, by statute, the ability to assess the consumer, the tax. But it is a very laborious process, and it's not something that we've had the staffing to do.
Okay. But then, coming back over to the governor's compliance package, I'm wondering how you're going to be able to, for 9 positions, be able to generate, and far be it from me to question when Director Archenko tells us that 9 positions will save us the difference between the cost of $1 million and the amount generated of 7.1. I think that she's proven that she can do that in the past. I'm hoping that the increased penalties under law will be able to bring us some enhanced enforcement immediately, or compliance immediately. But I guess what I'm after the look in the eye of reassurance that we're really talking about a net of $6.1 million after the expenditure.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I have complete confidence in this. For one thing, we don't do this alone. I mean, right now, we've been kind of holding a finger in the dike with a fragmented staff that are doing a variety of different things other than cigarette and other tobacco. One of our strategies is to work with the 9 states. As a matter of fact, we formed a regional multidisciplinary task force that's meeting next month, and we're going to talk about how we're going to deal with this, because these distributors are not just in California, just in Oregon. They're in all of our states. And so if we can have a strategy that's a regional strategy to address this, and the department will not be working, we will work with the Oregon State Police, we will work with Oregon Liquor Commission, we will also work with a variety of other community groups that have an interest in this that will help us. So we're not going to do this alone. Most of the tips that we get now are from either retailers, distributors, or someone who is saying, you know, this isn't right, and I don't think this is fair. And so we won't do it alone. We will do it with, this is just the 9 here. There are a lot of folks that will join us in this effort.
Just by way of comment, I'm assuming that the 9 state compact is the western states that are exhibited on 4-8, and I'm concerned when you bring 2 of those states in at 12%, Wyoming and Montana, at 12% back, you know, just exactly how anxious they're going to be to be of assistance to help us collect our 68 or help California collect its 87. In that process, and I assume that they'll work in good faith. But obviously, as they work in good faith, their sales come down.
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, they do have small populations, and so from their standpoint, I mean, they have very little of an issue. It is really more of the issue for the states that have the higher tax that's going to pay for health plan and other social programs that have been enacted by our legislatures.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, John. We are going to take a 5-minute break, and we'll be right back to finish the story.